Storming the core, a tempest embrace. Right or wrong, passion leaves its trace. Sports Illustrated, once revered and grand, now a jest, a punchline in the sand. Wrestling legend Ole Anderson, a curtain call, begins his next journey beyond the bra. Rest in peace, a whispered tribute to battles won in the squirrel circle, his legacy spun. Gilbert Arenas playing God's role, judging by race and color, a dangerous toll. But let wisdom prevail, let empathy bloom, for in unity lies our shared earthly room. Everybody, this is William Del Pilar, and this is Points on the Board. We have another solid show for you tonight. You know, I say solid because I'm improving weekly on all of this. I'm getting better, and it takes practice, you know. So I say we got a pretty good show. One day we're going to go, I have a show that Rush Limbaugh would roll over in his grave to be like. Yes, for those that don't know it, I am a conservative. I speak very ugly truths, including on this show, Points on the Board, and I'll probably do so as well tonight. Yes, I will, because Gilbert Arenas, a self-outed racist, is on the docket. Speaking of docket, tonight we're going to be covering Storming the Courts, the big debate over if fans should sit there and be allowed to storm the courts after a game, and no, they should not. The second topic is Sports Illustrated just a memory now? This happened a couple months ago, but, you know, Peter King just retired. And, you know, Peter King's era was the heart and soul of Sports Illustrated, better known as SI. And I'm not going to talk about Peter King. It's just, it seems a good time to revisit what I prepared to do weeks ago and didn't do. We're busy here, people. I have a couple of quick hits on Gilbert Arenas and Ole Anderson. Ole Anderson being a legendary wrestler, Gilbert Arenas, and former NBA player. Before we get going, where you can find us, social media platforms, YouTube, Rumble, under the profile Grumblings Media. You can also find us on our own website, grumblingsmedia.com, you will find this podcast, Points on the Board, our pop culture entertainment podcast, Red, White, and Rude, our libertarian podcast, Free for All, and others, as well as traditional podcast outlets such as Apple, Spotify, Google, and Pandora. Just look for the Grumblings Media handle, or the name of the show itself, this one being Points on the Board. But enough of that. Let's get going. We're going to talk some college basketball right now. Well, really not college basketball as much as storm. They call it storming the courts because we've had incidents lately where fans are storming the courts. Usually they used to do that with big, massive wins, not just with any type of win. So it's, once again, it's the moral decay of our society. People have respect for squat. But it also happens in other venues, you know, specifically football. Field storming has supposedly been a longstanding tradition in U.S. college sports, where exuberant fans rush onto the playing surfaces to celebrate the team's victory. However, recent incidents have raised concerns about player safety and the need for changes. We live in a very decayed, moralistic society right now, and it's exponentially gone south since 2000, since the turn of the century, and it's not going to get better. So I can see them at the end of the day getting rid of this. The truth of the matter, the fact that there are people who defend the court storming is what I find abominable. Sure, you can have your opinion, but let me put your kid on there. Let's see his knee get twisted up. Let's see him or her get into confrontation. Then you'll be thinking differently. It's just like these Palestine supporters who sit there and say, we need to stop the genocide of the Jews. I'm like, I have a friend who has a 16-year-old daughter, and I sat there and told him, look, bro, let's bring your 16-year-old daughter over here. I'm going to get my bat, barbed wire it, shove it up her, you know what, and I'm not done. Then I'm going to behead her, hold it up, parade around, stick it on there, and then you tell me enough with the violence. You know, until things happen to people specifically who are nowhere near the situation, including court storming, they view it as an equal scenario. It's not. People get hurt by the fans. Fans don't get hurt. Fans get hurt because of their own stupidity. Players are not asking the fans to storm. So if they get hurt, it's not on them. It's on the person who hurt them. So the latest incident happened a couple weeks ago with Duke versus Wake Forest during a court storming incident after Duke was upset by Wake Forest. And Wake Forest, the whole ACC is fun to watch, but Wake Forest is not a major power, but it's a well-known ACC team with its own rivalries. But after the Duke's upset loss against Wake Forest, Kyle Filipowski, not sure how to exactly pronounce it, he was a leading scorer for Duke. He suffered a knee injury. After the win, it was 73-69 for Wake Forest, and chaos erupted, and the fans rushed the floor. And we've seen that before. Usually the fans care, but not anymore. Now it's about the fans, them having, if you're a player, get out of my way. I'm a fan. I have a right to be on this court. That's how they look at things. So Filipowski suffered a series of collisions, obviously to his right knee, and he was frustrated with how the situation was handled, and he thought it was intentional. You know, and in this day and age, it could be. You know, do not ever deny that. You know, and then a fan even taunted Filipowski. You know, see, that's the issue. That's what I mean by the disrespect, the danger. You have fans because they know that a lot of these jails are now revolving doors. Look at New York City. Like Boston, Chicago, L.A. especially. They're revolving doors. You can commit a crime. You can commit murder and be out in the morning. I'm not lying. Go check it out. And that's emboldening everybody because they know there's no accountability for what they've done. And they don't care about being held responsible. They know they won't. You know, now, some claim it was incidental, but regardless, he injured his knee. He was able to return to the starting lineup about 4 days after, but still should never have happened. Other incidents, Caitlin Clark versus the Ohio State student. You know, Caitlin Clark has been making a lot of positive waves and a lot of blacks who don't like her are showing their racism because she's a star white female in a sport dominated by minorities and lesbians. Clark is a dynamic player. Yeah, y'all, lesbian. Yeah. It's one of those open secrets. Clark is a dynamic player. She collided with the Ohio State student in January. She wasn't injured, but the incident highlights the risk. When fans who don't care had nothing to lose, Caitlin Clark is making a lot of money now. She's going to make a lot of money in the WNBA. They're the ones who have a lot to lose. And a Mississippi student versus a Louisiana State football player. Last fall, the student approached the player, and it resulted in a collision. The student was knocked to the ground. Alabama football player versus a fan. A few seasons ago, an Alabama football player pushed a woman who had joined a crowd on the field after the Crimson Tide lost a game at Tennessee. Cell phone footage of these events circulated widely. Now, here's my issue. The issue is the fan really shouldn't have been there. The fact that she got knocked out of the field shouldn't have happened either. But that's what you get. You get chaos. And this guy's dressed up in his gear. He's going to hurt the girl if she runs into him. You know, then what happens? She's going to sue. And with NIL now, she'll sue the player. I mean, he's got bank now. I mean, obviously, this was a few years ago. None of that applied. But times are changing. Now these players can become targets. Sure, I stormed the field, but he attacked me. Don't think I'm kidding. Now, I'm laughing because of how ludicrous it sounds. But that will come. Mark my words. We are a litigious society. Another one, the Arkansas Razorback fans versus Duke Blue Devils. The fans stormed the court after the win, and nothing happened in that one. That was supposed to be my first one, just to give an example. Oh, gosh. Okay, here's another one. After USC victory against Stanford, fans rushed the field at the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum, resulting in injuries to at least 10 people. The SEC fines LSU for court storming. The Southeastern Conference fined LSU $100,000 after the Tiger fans stormed the basketball floor. The SEC is taking a stronger stance against fans. Good for them. See, so this keeps happening, and finally people are noticing. And the final one I'll give is, I'm not sure if it's the same one I said by USC fans injured after storming the field, but I just remember seeing this scene in the world wide of sports, or some kind of back before the internet, before streaming, before cable, before all that. It was one of the highlight reels in one of the openings or closings of one of the wide world of sports, say on Saturday or something. It was the annual big game against – no, it wasn't, because the other one was USC over Stanford. This was the big game, it was called, against Bay Area rival Cal. Stanford versus Cal. Stanford had a 20-19 lead with 4 seconds left. Stanford kicked off, and Cal did your series of laterals and tossing it back, eventually scoring the winning touchdown. But in the middle of all this, the Stanford band, thinking, hey, this game's over, started heading out of the field. Oh, and it became legendary, and it's often called the play. These incidents all underscore the need to balance celebrating victories and ensuring player safety during court storming or field storming events. And the truth of the matter is, that sounds nice, what I just said, but it's an impossibility. These are drunk fans. I mean, seriously, especially at the football games, and a handful of security to have to deal with them. What's going to happen one time? You're going to find a football player likely, or a basketball player, getting in a confrontation with a fan, and it blow will happen. So these things really have to just come to an end. There's always an era for certain things, and the era of storming courts and fields should be coming to an end. So what was the media's response? Well, I pulled two of them out, both from ESPN. One is how it should go, because it would stop it immediately, and the other one is just stupidity. ESPN's Jay Bilas response. ESPN's Jay Bilas suggested detaining and citing fans who storm the court after college basketball games following an incident where Filipowski was injured. Blah, 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 blah. I shouldn't have even wrote that sentence out. It was too long. I like doing bullet points. Bilas said you detain and cite the fans who stormed the court. And by citing them, you give them a ticket. You know, Bilas is an American. He played college basketball for Duke, and now he's and played in the pros for many years. Was never a stud, but had a good career and earned, I'm sure, enough. He's now a basketball analyst for ESPN, and he's also practicing law in North Carolina. Uber successful individual. I rarely agree with him. He's a dumb bleep leftist, but he's uber successful. God bless him, man. He's taken the exceptionalism of America and transformed himself to take advantage of it, and he's living the American dream. Then there was the idiot, ESPN's Richard Jefferson's response. Jefferson's been vocal about his stance at court storming in college basketball. He called Bilas' proposal the dumbest thing I've ever heard. He emphasized that finding other ways to protect players during court storming events is essential. That's a moron's excuse. I mean, so in essence, the players have to play second fiddle because it's their right to storm the court. No, that's not the dumbest thing I've ever heard. That's the most stupid thing I've ever heard. He thinks that court storming is an integral part of college sports. Really? Actually, it's not. You know, it's... And he says attempting to curb it with arrests and citations is impractical. No, it's not. You quit. Once it hits the news, 300 people were cited and arrested and are being processed. Well, first of all, that's some good tax dollars there for the university town. But more importantly, next time they'll stop. That's how you stop it. Oh, hell, man, they're going to give a citation, throw us in jail. They'll stop. It's human nature. Jefferson's a bum. What a moron. And again, I'm not a Bilas fan, but this is a night and this is a simple black and white issue. And you don't want – and if these NIL players start to get hurt, there's going to be a lot of hell coming from the boosters and the people paying them. You know, he pointed out the tradition has existed for decades. Well, you know, slavery existed for many, many years. That was always bad from the get-go. We finally, as a country, came and had a civil war over it. You know? It was tradition. You know, the fact that I got to go to that type of example to show the stupidity of this Jefferson moron is beyond words. You know, again, he pointed out tradition existed for decades and the focus should be on safeguarding the players while letting the fans run amok. He said, let's not get owed and get the get off my lawn, get a citation. Let's arrest them all. Do we know what we're talking about when we say these things? Actually, yes, we do, Richard. Dick Jefferson. Dick Jefferson defends course storming and advocates for a balanced approach. I disagree with Dick. And as I research more, I realize, well, no wonder Dick is Dick. He's a social justice racist. He sides with the players regardless that the evidence shows much of the social justice equity he talks about is manufactured and not true. He refuses to look at the data showing police hate crime is negligible when compared to black crime rates. Yet he and others, especially supremacists like Jemima Hill and Bonami Jones, continue to preach racism. So, of course, he's going to have a stupid take as he did. He puts people before law and order. In this case, and that's why he doesn't like this. Dick Jefferson's an idiot. There's dangers to both players and fans, as I discuss. There's legal liabilities to both sides of this, especially if you get a con artist, a student who targets the big money NIL player, put him in a situation. I have to say a couple words to these young kids who think with their junk before their brain, and you say something, they're going to just go off and hit you. When players like this have never been told no their whole lives, confrontation like this do not go well in terms for the player. It usually ends up with them beating somebody, having to pay out a lot of money. Agents and former retired players told me the moment a young child is recognized to have special abilities, they're treated completely different. Doesn't matter if they live in the barrio, ghetto, or trailer park, they're treated like gods. So these are the star players that will go to college, get big NIL contracts, and they'll be targeted. We live in a victim mentality society. That's not good for court storming or field storming. Legal issues have also never been as corrupt in seeking money for nothing and succeeding as they are today. And that, my friends, is why court storming should stop. And ESPN, you need to stop hiring race hustlers and get back to sports. Yeah, that was a time in my career. People from ESPN wanted me to go apply over there. My company was tops in the world. ESPN, CBS, Fox, all of them. I never did. My wife did not want to leave this area. And I was told a valuable lesson, which deep down I already knew from a vice president of now it's not direct TV, the other one, I forget the other one, but their competitor. He was a VP, and he said, William Del Pilar, you're going to last 2 weeks before I fire you, and not because I don't like you. I love you, but you're a Y guy, and you're not a Y guy because you're an a-hole. You're a Y guy because you know it betters your game, it betters your project. It's what's needed for you to grow and learn. That's not what they want in the corporate world. They will stab you in the back in 2 weeks and throw you under the bus because you're a threat. So that's why I never ended up working for these companies. But nevertheless, my point is ESPN was once idolized by everybody, respected, seen as a business model to follow. And now they're just a joke. They're just a progressive joke that promotes racism and hatred. And they're losing and bleeding money. Their parent company, Disney, wants to get rid of them or do something completely drastic to try to generate more money, because they've lost tens of millions annually or hundreds of millions annually now, you know. So and it starts with firing bums like that. All right, I've dwelled on that topic enough. Moving on. The business of sports, the slow death of Sports Illustrated. You know, a couple of months ago, they let go most of their writing staff. I wanted to talk about this then, but they're an icon. You can talk about this anytime in terms of the fall of an icon. And what brought this back up to me to pull out the old notes I had written about, I had wrote down, was Peter King's retirement. At one time, Sports Illustrated was the bomb. It was the iconic brand of respect. It was the print version of ESPN Sports Center. You know, and it's gone downhill ever since it was sold. Their owner is Authentic Brands Group. They're pulling the license from Arena Group. So what happened is Authentic Brands Group owned the brand Sports Illustrated. They allowed the company Arena Group to license, meaning to put the magazines out, merchandise, whatever. Due to this license revocation, they laid off most of their staff. You know, now Authentic Brands bought SI from Meredith Corporation in 2019 for $110 million. I mean, it's and Meredith was trying to get rid of it. You know, Authentic Brands is a business that acquires intellectual property of stars and brands and makes money from licensing deals. This is their job. They don't care about building the company. They just want to sell the license. Let somebody handle it. They'll just have the revenue in the contract. They want their set money over the stress of having to make money. You know, their portfolio includes Muhammad Ali and Marilyn Monroe. So if you see a commercial with Muhammad Ali or Marilyn Monroe or one of those CGI where they're in a modern commercial as if they're alive, you know, it's because Authentic Brands allowed whoever's making that commercial, say it's a Coke commercial, they allowed Coke to license it for that commercial. ABG license gave Arena the right to publish Sports Illustrated, SI for Kids, the swimsuit issue, SI branded events. Video and audio media in English and Spanish are in North America, the UK, Ireland, Australia, New Zealand. The point being, it's a big, powerful brand that SI left. I had to send a message. There's a lot of potential there. Had Arena Group been able to make its regular quarterly payments, it would have had the option to renew the license for up to 100 years. Ooh, look at that. That's pretty much ownership for 100 years. I mean, it's the lifespan of the people who made it happen. But they may have missed payments. Arena Group missed a $4 million quarterly payment on the license at the end of 2023. In other words, they weren't making enough profit to maintain the brand. It's 3.75 technically. And that triggered Authentic Brands' right to pull the trigger and take the license back. ABG said it allowed Arena to cure its breach of the licensing arrangement, meaning they allowed them to, hey, come on, let's work something out. An Arena Group noted the loss of its SI license means it immediately owed ABG $45 million. So what happens when they lose the license, they have to pay up? Well, if they're losing the license because they're not making money, ABG is not going to get a dime out of that $45 million. Kind of an odd makeup there. But that's based off the terms of their agreement. And Arena suggested the loss of the license or some of the financial terms aren't set yet. I'm not sure where they stand today. It's been a couple of months. They're supposedly engaging in continuing discussions. But look, for all intents and purposes, magazines like Sports Illustrated are dead. You know, the website is woke, is mediocrity in the quality of the work. So, you know, it's not even worth the $45 million they owe them. Arena now owes more to ABG than double the value of the company's market cap. So they're only worth $22 million, 90 cents a share. And they owe double that. So the layoffs. Arena said it was laying off one third of its workforce, and that'll incur costs of $5 to $7 million. So they fired more than 100,000 employees throughout its organizations. And that organization includes the Hockey News, the Street Financial News site, Parade, Men's Journal. The companies announced eliminating more than 100 staffers at non-SI publications as part of a transformative shift towards a streamlined business model. That makes sense. You know, I just don't know if it's enough at this point in time. You know, if they don't have a plan in place now, they're going to struggle. In 2020, when it was run by Maven, they had their own significant layoffs. Maven was somebody else who was licensed, is the thought process here. They had to incur significant layoffs to save $27 million. So everybody's going broke. Everybody's going broke at SI. All those products, It's shoddy writing, meaning, you know, I go to Sports Illustrated. Some of the articles are decent, but it's a woke, and they're not in-depth. They give you the surface level because they're not involved in the game. They don't have reporters covering it. They're just a brand writing about it. See, and that's kind of the difference. When it was DeFore, Dr. Z, Peter King, you know, they were like ESPN. They can make a call, people will return it. They're not. They haven't been that for decades. And at the end, I'll tell you a side story with Dr. Z. I did not like the and Don Banks. I did not and Peter King that I talked about previously. But News Guild Union is a protecting force for the writers. It's a Sports Illustrated employee union. It called the Arena Group to honor the union contract. Yeah, if there's no money coming in, they can't honor anything. So it's been 4 years under the Arena Group. Previously, it was under the Maven stewardship, and it's just they're not making it work, you know. And despite what the News Guild wants, they're not going to honor all the terms of the union contract. And it doesn't matter how much you fight News Guild, you're not going to get squat. You can't. What's that saying? You can't get blood from a rock, you know. Now, the Arena Group had this license from 2019 for at least 10 years, and it's been pulled in year five, at the beginning of year five. Now, this pulling of the license is in the first issue. In December, they fired their chief executive, Sports Illustrated did, Ross Levinson, when the magazine allegedly used AI-generated stories, and it drew public backlash. Look, I got to be honest. That doesn't bother me. You know, the public backlash is public more from people within the industry or connected to the industry who don't want their jobs sourced out to AI. AI is still a long way from doing that. But one day, probably in the next 15 to 20 years. So, for example, in Hollywood, there's millions of scripts that have been turned into TV shows already, both successful and failed. Man, you start inputting all that stuff in the AI, they start squirming into the what works, what doesn't work. AI is going to be able to write better television weekly scripts than any writer could have. That's the future. But it's different when you're talking about writing about live events versus something that's scripted. You know, but the reason Levinson allowed SI to do this was because it was cheaper. They didn't have to pay AI. You know, the fact that it got discovered shows maybe the AI quality wasn't that high. But AI will help out sports writers in creating content. So, for example, one thing I plan on testing is doing the podcast, having it transcripted, then using AI to break it up and partition it into an article. And from there, I'll go back in and then I'll work my magic. It's my work from beginning to end. I just had AI play the co-employee editor role of, hey, move this here, move that there. Stuff that I would do anyway. So, is there going to be an Arena buyout? Arena Group is going through a deal to be bought by a 5-Hour Energy billionaire. To be bought by 5-Hour Energy billionaire, Manoj Hargava. That's still pending. I'm not sure where that's at. I will give an update if that comes. But we all know the 5-Hour Energy. That's a little red thing you see when you go to 7-Eleven or stores. They're those impulse buys. Okay, so as we know, though, regarding the AI, it says here, SI was discovered in my notes using AI to generate content accompanied by made-up bylines and author photos. That's what got him in trouble. Creating fake people and pictures. Can't do that. 2 weeks later, that's when the CEO was fired. And part of it, actually a lot of it, was likely because they were going broke, which leads into go broke, go woke, go broke. AI-generated stories are the problem. The problem is that Sports Illustrated put a dude in a swimsuit on the cover of their 2023 annual swimsuit edition. A dude. That is their top-selling everything with the SI brand. And it's bought by 99.9% men. The other 0.1% being lesbians. I'm kidding. I don't know. I thought it was a good joke. But somebody's going to get triggered and see if I care. The point being is, they knew their target market and purposely ignored it to be politically correct, to look good for their peers. So few are sympathetic than employees. They're just as woke as ownership. Go woke, go broke. That's what somebody tweeted to them. Another person said, who else loves it when karma just slaps the bleep out of those that really need it? Again, I agree. 2023, put a dude in a swimsuit. SI, the obese edition, 2022. The magazine began putting plus size women on the cover and covering them for fat positivity. Look, if you're a fat slob, you're going to have heart problems, digestive problems, internal problems, heart attack waiting to happen. I am not one of these guys who am a fat positivity non-shamer. I'm Latino. Let me tell you something. We love thick, curvy women, but we don't love obese women. And that's where I'm getting at. If you're obese, you are a problem for society. Higher medical costs, a burden on society. How many times have we had to get a city crane to take a guy out because they're too big in their hotel, in their room, and they die? These are extremes. I get it. But instead of preaching fat positivity, how about we preach good health? The problem is 90% of what people eat is processed. I look good for my age, not because I view myself as a good-looking man or any of that. I don't. I look how I am, better than my peers, because I don't eat processed foods. I had a steak I cooked earlier for lunch. With that lunch, I had homemade cream of chicken soup made from scratch. I'm going to have a salad with shrimp I made myself. You know, do I cheat? Yeah, I have a candy bar, cheat, you know, but 90% of me is not processed foods. So, in 2022, they were pushing fat positivity models in their sponsored runway shows and swimsuit editions in 2017. So this goes back to 2017. This magazine is supposed to focus on athletic excellence, not obesity. So in 2021, they had somebody called Yumi Nu. The idea of fat positivity is an apparent loathing for their core readership. Let me repeat that. The idea. Oh, it's what I said earlier. We don't look at fat positivity as a positive when we pick up Sports Illustrated magazine. You know, another side note, I once had a friend. I was 18, 19, 20. I helped them open up and start up their comic book shop. It was uberly successful. This was back in 1982. The comic shop is still in business today. Different ownership. Both owners died. Why? They were fat and obese. I loved them to death like family. And I went to one after the first one died of a heart attack. He entered retirement year a couple years only. Then boop, died. So I was talking to a friend who was even bigger, and I was trying to convince him. He didn't listen. He told me flat out, dude, I appreciate it, but that's not me. He ended up selling the business a few years later, having to take care of his mother, and ended up dying like 5 years later. At the time, the guy was probably in his early 40s. People incapable of athleticism should not be used as representatives of the sporting world. The Sports Illustrated magazine is the pinnacle of beauty in the eyes of their readers. It doesn't matter whether you agree or disagree. That's how their readers view it. Then the company latched onto the feminist equal pay movement for women's sports. I'm a believer, supply and demand. If you're kicking some serious tail, earning some serious cash, then yeah, those salaries should go up. But they don't, because at the end of the day, nobody cares to watch women's sports. I'm not knocking women's sports at all. I don't care. God bless y'all. Stay in shape. Look good. Feel good. Bring honor to your colleges, to yourself. I'm not going to pay for it because I just don't have interest. I have more interest in curling than I do in the WNBA. Curling's pretty exciting, man, the way those announcers do the Olympics. You know, that little puck just sliding. But they went into the equal pay movement. They argued that female athletes and clubs should be offered pay equal to male sports. It's bull. you're going to watch women's soccer. Those pay scales are going to go down because they're going to realize, well, you're no good anymore. Every team goes through its ups and downs, and you're just not – nobody cares. The movement completely ignored the critical factors of audience interest, the people who pay. The reason you can get $5 million for 30 seconds in a Super Bowl commercial is because 80 to 120 million people are watching. The reason you can get $50, $500 for a WNBA commercial is because 500 people are watching. Male athletes tend to make more money because many are interested in watching men's sports. Again, I am. Football, not baseball. It's too boring for me. Basketball, not anymore. It's become a corrupt sport, and that goes back to Shaq and the refereeing, how the league looks the other way when rules are broken, things like that. In essence, it's the asylum controlling the or the inmates controlling the asylum. It's just it's not a good game to watch either. It's changed. In fact, it's gone downhill since Michael Jordan's days in terms of ratings. And so it's gone downhill so badly that when it bumps up, oh, basketball's back. No, basketball will be a predominantly European Chinese sport in the next 50 to 100 years is the way it's looking like it's going. Then there was an SI Trans swimsuit issue 2023, which I brought up earlier. You know. Kim Petras, a German pop star, she looks good. He looks good. Whatever. I'm like, damn, that's a good looking man. You know, he was the first trans woman to win a Grammy Award for Best Pop Duo Group Performance. You know, she won it for Unholy with Sam Smith. It reached number one on the Billboard Hot 100 chart. So Petras was on the cover of the SI Shoe. This led to a conservative boycott in 2023. Now they're on the verge of being out of business. You know, the breadcrumbs I just gave you leads to the reason why SI is dying. A death by a million paper cuts that they did to themselves. Rejecting wokeness. Americans don't want obese women, transgenders, or anything woke when it comes to Sports Illustrated and its brand and how it's presented itself. They don't want that in general, as we're seeing. Most American consumers don't want woke content and will not pay for it, as we're seeing with Sports Illustrated, as we're seeing with ratings. Furthermore, the people who want this kind of content are usually activists with no money to spend, or they don't support the companies doing this. How many transgenders, how many feminist women are buying Sports Illustrated, swimsuit issue? Probably none, if any. Yeah, and that might be fine for women's magazines, but when it comes to a man-driven customer base, that kind of wokeism doesn't sell. Free markets. In a free market, people can always walk away from woke businesses. Thank you, capitalism. Thank you, America. But Democrats don't want a free market. They're trying to tell us what we can read, write, buy, preach, pray, get taught, etc. It doesn't matter how much these woke media companies, individuals, how much they saturate the media with propaganda, people will not open their wallets. In a socialist or ESG-based world, governments and tax dollars would fully support companies. And they're trying to do that. So, for example, Australia, because they want to keep their leftism alive, they want to keep all that crap going, they have a tax on papers with the internet. They want to bring this tax here. So in essence, Google, every time a story, newspaper story shows up and somebody clicks on it from their search engines and the person reads it for free, Google has to pay a tax. They're doing that to support their propaganda leftist allies in the mainstream media. That's socialism, authoritarianism, communism, whatever you want. It's the elite few dictating and controlling the masses. See, that's about communism, socialism, Marxism, all that. You know, people get into nuances and the difference. I don't care. It's about the few directly being dictators and authoritarians to the masses. So, authentic brands, the owner, they say they're optimistic about SI's future. That's because they own the license. Somebody, some other bum's going to come around and take it up. Hopefully it's a good bum who sits there and steers it back in the right direction. You know, they'll look for a new licensee, or they may try to outright sell it too. T TBD on that. They state they're committed to keeping it, including an editorial team. We'll see how long that lasts. And they're committed to a traditional ad-supported Sports Illustrated model. Well, it's one of the few models around that print publications are still using. We'll see how all this works out. But at the end of the day, I mean, you've got to realize you have to cater to your demographic. And they did not, and they paid the price. Now, my story with Dr. Z. So Sports Illustrated was a brand, and it shows the arrogance of people and their highfalutin. Don Banks got into it with somebody I know in the fantasy sports industry. He thought he was smarter, better. He was tossing his elitism around towards them. They challenged him. We got into it with Dr. Z. Dr. Z called us wanting a free subscription. And I was like, well, who is this guy? Because I don't read Sports Illustrated. I never did. I never thought it was a great magazine for what I wanted. I wanted the sports news. I wanted the data, the numbers on that. They were more into feel-good stories. And I would read it whenever it was the first magazine I picked up at the dentist, at the doctor's, at the library, you know, but I would never pay for it. So it wasn't a magazine I looked for. I was buying Pro Football Weekly, the sporting news, you know, so periodicals like that. So Dr. Z called up. One of my guys took the call. One of my employees. He goes, "There's some guy named Dr. D." I'm like, "Well, I don't know who is he." He says he's Sports Illustrated. Then my partner said, "Yeah," because he got Sports Illustrated. I know who Dr. Z is. And I go, "Well, what kind of guy is he? What's he want?" Well, he's kind of demanding a free subscription. I go, "What do you mean?" I go, "Well, we don't give free subscriptions now." He goes, "Do you know who I am? I'm Dr. Z. Now, damn it, I am blah, blah, blah." He just went off. Now, this is what is being relayed to me. Well, I said, "Well, you tell Dr. Z, I don't give a damn who the fuck he is. Excuse my French. I don't give a damn about who he is. I'll tell him no, he can pay for it like somebody else." And he tried a couple of times afterwards. You know, had he been polite, I would have given it to him. We gave it out to everybody. But the arrogance. And it came from another SI guy in Don Banks. And then Peter King crapped on fantasy football. And a few years later, he's selling out his integrity to pimp for them in commercials. So, you know, that whole SI brand, I don't care. It's one of those icons. If it dies, it dies. Woohoo! There'll be another icon in another year from now we're talking about. Oh, man. So let us move on to an ugly situation here. To black supremacy in the tribal warfare. I am Latino. My grandmother's black. I have relatives black. My niece, God bless her beautiful little self, who's helping me out. She's biracial. We run the gamut. Black to white, white to black. Most of my whole Panamanian side, my mom and my sister and myself. My mom because of the Asian in us and the Indian in her. And myself and my sister because my dad's Puerto Rican side and the Hispania in her. But we're like kind of like the lightest in the whole clan, in the whole Dominguez clan out of Panama. As a child, I would be grabbed by the cheek, or looked at, "Why are those eyes blue?" Huh? You know? I just look different. I never cared. I thought it was kind of cool. "Oh, I'm getting attention." Yeah, you're a little kid. Yeah. So that's been my life. I didn't hear the N-word until I moved to these United States of America. And then I had to ask the guy, "What's that mean?" I'm dead serious. Of course, you have to understand my whole life was pretty much Panamanian driven with aspects of Americanism in my education. I went to an American school and television. You know, we had one English station in Panama. And at school, as little kids, you don't hear those words. So I had no clue when we moved here to the States. I was a little older, you know. But Gilbert Arenas, turns out he's a black supremacist playing the race card. He talks about European players as code for white NBA players. And before I go on, we got to give a hat tip to one of the best writers I have come across since I started working in sports back in the 90s. And I'm in the Fantasy Sports Writers Hall of Fame. I chose not to take the fight up in tribalism with my first company because it was a pure play fantasy sports and a regular sports news site. But Bobby Burkus with Outkick wrote a great article, Gilbert Arenas Dog Whistles by Calling for NBA to Remove Euro Players. Arenas uses Euro players as code for white NBA players. He jokes about promoting violence against him on the court too. He's not joking. He's just saying it in a joking way, but that's what he really means. He's saying it because they're white and he's racist. He said, quote, "They are taking the league from our people," said Arenas. And again, that's from the article. "They" refers to white people. "Ours" refers to black people. Think about it. They are taking the leagues from our people. Let's backtrack to 1950. The NFL, boxing, all those. Life tends to be cyclical. Or Jewish boxers were great. White boxers were great. Now there's black boxers great. Then Latinos are starting to rise. Now with the MMA, it's a proliferation of white dominance with black in there as champions too, back and forth. So everything's cyclical. Now Arenas is upset that there are more and more white players entering the NBA. And 99.9% of them are from Europe. "They are taking the league from our people," said Arenas. That's as racist as you can get. Now, his whole shtick for this is because defense. He says his defense dead in the NBA. Right now, the NBA is experiencing a scoring increase. It's exponentially out there with the numbers. Teams are averaging 115.2 points per game, and that's compared to 96.3 from 2011 to 2021, I want to say. Yeah. Most would say it's load management, meaning teams are resting players. So you're not getting as good quality defensive players out there. You're getting more scrubs in terms of minutes. And the regular season doesn't matter to a lot of these players. A good chunk of teams make the NBA. You can play half-ass and still make the playoffs. Rules aren't called, palming, walking. I mean, LeBron James is notorious for taking, notorious. Approximately 60%, I'd say, of all his plays where he's driving are usually walks and the refs don't call him. And I know that's the case. I forget the ref. There was a corrupt ref who called his bookie or whoever he was fixing games for and said, they're like, well, how can you do a watch? He started calling palming on Allen Iverson. And by rule, he was palming. So they're not enforcing the rules. You should enforce all rules. It gives you a cleaner game, a sharper game. It allows for more competition, allows for greater proliferation of players who have greater skills versus talent. So it does a lot of things by focusing and calling these rules, and they don't. It's another reason I no longer watch the game. And the other thing is, like with any other sport, these players want highlight reels. So that's their focus on offense. They don't care about defense. They want to be seen in a highlight reel on ESPN, or at least back in the day on SportsCenter. Now it's just the internet. And the league wants more offense versus defense. So those are the reasons defense is dead. So the supremacist, Gilbert Arenas, weighs in. He blames European players for the lack of defense in the NBA, suggesting they lack athleticism and defensive skills, which is another complete lie. It's racial undertones. His criticism targets only white players, using European as a code word, and it reflects a broader issue of racial tension within the basketball culture. They don't want white people playing the game, yet more and more white players are coming in. And this is where Bobby does a great job. The article highlights European players like Giannis Antetokounmpo and Rudy Gobert, and they've excelled defensively. And that challenges and destroys Gilbert Arenas' black supremacist generalization. Giannis is the NBA Defensive Player of the Year in 2022. Gobert, 2018, 2019, 2021. But he excludes them because they're black. So if he says European players, they destroy his whole narrative, but he pulls them out of his equation because they're black, which thus proves Bobby Burak's point. European is code for white. It's a false narrative. So regardless of color or culture, they're European, Giannis and Gobert, and that destroys this false narrative. However, black supremacists like Arenas never look at the facts. See Jemele Hill, Bomani Jones, and even Stephen A. Smith more and more over the past few weeks. They don't care about the facts. They just know it's an emotional powder keg. And if you're black and getting angry at me, why? More than welcome to come on the show and we'll debate it. Because there's no reason to be why. Because everything I've said is factual. And backed up by, and or backed up by the data. Actually, not me, Bobby Barack of Outkick Sports with this great article. Once again, Gilbert Arenas, dog whistles by calling for NBA to remove European Euro players. Let's get a reality check. American players who don't play defense. Damon Lillard, Trae Young, James Harden. James Harden is the biggest joke of them all. The guy is always about James Harden, only about James Harden. Goes from team to team to team, plays him, gets a big fat contract. And over the last 4 years has not been able to produce. And even at his pinnacle, he didn't play good defense. He was a detriment. He was hurting the team defensively. Guy's not won a championship, never will. Ja Morant and even Steph Curry at times doesn't play great defense. Now, I'm going to bring Cheryl Swoops in here. People like Arenas and Cheryl Swoops say they can't be racist because they have no power. That's an utter flat-out lie. In a previous podcast, I talked about my trip to Compton to drop my friend who has black and the more browner side of Latino in him. My friend Ramon Figueroa, a great dude, has more integrity in his pinky than I'll ever have or ever see amongst the crowd. He's one of those types, just full of integrity. We became tight. He asked me, he was in the military, hey, can you drive my car to Compton to my uncle? From there, my uncle will take it when he needs to the base for shipping. They put him on a ship, you know, and they ship him over. I had no power in Compton. I was told specifically how to act, what to do, and what streets to take. And I was warned, do not get out here. They don't care that you're Latino because you don't look it. They will just beat your ass and maybe some of them will pull a knife or gun. You're lucky if you only get robbed is what I was told. Yeah, there was another place, Hollywood Heights, right next to where I went to school. At BET, I don't have any power. And they hire mostly 99.9% black. So saying they don't have power is a complete lie. Look what they're doing in the NBA. They want to keep the power of only black players there, despite the fact that sports is based on competition. So that's nothing but a lie. The Dred Scott, you know, and they also say this about, well, it's the government. The government says, I can't be racist, William. Hate is taught, people. It is an emotion that is taught. You are not born hating. You are not born loving. We are born as survivors once we become to a mentality where we can assume control of our lives. We're about surviving. We are taught to be good. We are shown to be bad. Hate is taught. Racism falls under hate, and it's taught. But they'll tell you, well, the government says I can't be a racist, so I can't be a racist. Well, the Dred Scott decision said blacks were only property, and that was it. And we all know that was not right. That was not true. That was a lie by a racist Supreme Court. And it helped precipitate the Civil War, which cost 500,000 white lives, about 300,000 of them dying for black Americans or for free black slaves to gain their freedom. The simple truth is sports journalism has a big makeup of ex-players, many who, with the blessing of ESPN and the mainstream media, now blatantly express and showcase their racism towards whites. Kendrick Perkins, Ryan Clark, Bomani Jones, you know, Kendrick Perkins with NBA players, Ryan Clark with Brock Purdy, Bomani Jones with everybody who's white, Jamel Hill with everybody who's white. 85% of hate crime is done by black Americans towards Asians. And Jamel Hill was trying to sit there and say, Asians owe black Americans when the Supreme Court struck down that universities could not be racist towards Asians in favor of blacks. That's what was struck down. And Jameel Hill had a cow about that. And the list goes on and on. Until we force it to end to bring sanity back, this country's going to suffer economically and globally. Look, I have run the gamut from black to white. That's why I'm in this fight. I have nothing but love for my family. I have given thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to family who weren't my skin tone because I loved them, because they needed it. They were in a time of crisis because they were good human beings. I didn't care about color. I got my biracial niece. I'm trying to teach her some things technologically so she doesn't have to flip burgers as a teenager, where she can get a job at an office. And that way, once she does go to college, graduate, so that she's that far ahead of her peers. Racists don't do that, the people of color. Technically, I am a person of color. I just came out with the lightest skin of the skin. Those who lord over us don't care because they're pushing and promoting it from a rich history of racism from the Democratic Party, who still believe in the plantation and still believe in keeping us clueless. These people I've been talking about, they are overseers, highly paid overseers that keep us ignorant and on the plantation by using our emotion with lies and false narratives. And that's a simple truth. All right. I kind of enjoy that battle. Why? Because nobody's standing up to racists. Did you know that white racism is like negligible? But according to the media, it's what's destroying the country. If you looked at the data, you would know that, but you don't. And that's why I get angry. You know, minorities talk about how they're being crapped on when the reality is they're choosing to become a victim. Is it harder? Yeah. But it's harder for anybody who doesn't have that money. I did not have a dime. I built a multi-million dollar company and sold it for multi-millions of dollars. It wasn't a big multi-million dollar sale, but I lived the American dream. I was doing a kid's sport. I still am to a degree. It's American dream. Nobody gave me a dime. Not one freaking penny. If I can do it, a regular, ordinary Joe, then so can you. And that's what I'm teaching my 15-year-old niece right now. And I'm teaching her there are going to be people who do hate you for your color. You got to stand your ground, but realize the way you overcome those people is by being exceptional and doing better than they. And that's my final point on Gilbert Arenas, who outed himself as a black supremacist. He joins the ranks of Bomani Jones, Kendrick Perkins, Jemele Hill. I still have a little hope for Ryan Clark. A little hope. Some quick hits. I'm sorry, that was a quick hit, supposedly. But another quick hit here. Wrestling legend Ole Anderson, dead at 81. Now, Ole Anderson died about 2 to 3 weeks ago now. I just kept bumping his little story here. Just we got overloaded with others. But he was a wrestling legend. He was a, if you know wrestling, you know he was a founding member of the iconic Four Horsemen. If you don't know wrestling, the Four Horsemen was like a dynasty. Wrestling is choreographed, but it's not fake. They are taking the beatings they take. They are doing their own stunts. They actually take more physical damage than most athletes do in their own sport. But it's choreographed, meaning there's a predetermined winner. So I don't view it as a sport, but it's always been seen as a sport. That's why I have this in points on the board. Big John, my partner, was going to originally do this, but you know he's very busy too. But I wanted to mention about Big John. What got me excited about doing wrestling for us is Big John had one of the first PC wrestling games in Sergeant Slaughter. It was Sergeant Slaughter's Mat Wars, and Sergeant Slaughter endorsed it. And he went on the road a couple of times with Sergeant Slaughter. So I wanted him to come and talk about that and then to talk about Ole Anderson. Because I know wrestling as a kid, I loved it. 11:30 at night as a kid. Once we moved to the States, I wasn't watching Creature Feature. I was watching the NWA wrestling that was filmed out of Raleigh, you know. And I was always, and I grew up with that. Then I grew up with the TNT version. This was my teenage years. And I loved it. I knew who Ole Anderson was. I knew about the Four Horsemen. He was a prolific and decorated tag team wrestler. He was just a heel also. A heel being the person who plays the bad guy. Let's take a step back. His early career and his rise to fame. He was born in Minneapolis. He began pro wrestling in 67. He passed away at 81 a couple weeks ago. So he was wrestling. I mean, he just stopped wrestling. I don't know, 15 years ago, maybe. So it's, you know, 81. These guys wrestle into their 50s. It's money. You know, they didn't earn a lot of money in their heyday. So they earned a lot of money later in their careers. That's why you see Ric Flair still involved. The money he's earning the last 10 years, 15 years, exponentially dwarfs all the money they earn between all the Four Horsemen and a bunch of other names. They just didn't earn a lot of money. But he started in 1967 with the American Wrestling Association. Now, he was part of a family of brothers, Gene, Lars, and Arn Anderson, who formed the Minnesota Wrecking Crew. Here's something I didn't know until I became an adult. It was a fictional family. None of them were related, yet a couple of them were the spitting image of each other. The Andersons became a dominant force in the Midwest region. It was similar to the Von Erich family in the Southern Territories, and they're making a movie of the Von Erich family. It's kind of a disgrace. It's despicable in terms of what those kids went through. Not that it was they were forced anything. It's kind of what you would call a dark movie. It doesn't have a happy ending for anybody in the Von Erich family. But those were two of the big. I mean, I knew the Von Erich family. I didn't catch them. They weren't part of what I watched in wrestling, but wrestling in my world was so big and yet it was so small, you knew of these others. So what happened is, like Harley Race wasn't part of the NWA, but would come over to do a special match, you know? So you knew about all these wrestlers. Now the Four Horsemen era, it was made up of Ole Anderson, Arn Anderson, who y'all may not know of, and Tully Blanchard. I mean, these were old school guys. And Ric Flair was the Fourth Horseman. There were other iterations of the Four Horsemen that had like Lex Luthor and other people, but this was the individuals who formed it. Now, the reason I say Ric Flair lasted is he's the one who transcended their era of greatness to achieve even greater fame because of the marketing genius of Vince McMahon. Whether you like him or not, I don't like him. He was a marketing genius that took the WWF and now the WWE to billionaire heights. So Ole and Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard, and Ric Flair. And they promised to bring apocalyptic chaos to pro wrestling. And they helped start the shenanigans of what would happen during the interview, behind the scenes. Before that, you'd get it during the interview, they'd punch each other. But these people started it on the streets, in the locker room. So they took it outside the wrestling arena. The group set a style, attitude, and success standard, and it inspired future stables of wrestlers, wrestling families, wrestling groups, not organizations, but wrestlers who would be tag team partners or like their other Four Horsemen, etc. So the legacy and influence, the Four Horsemen feuded with top tag teams, leaving a lasting impact on the wrestling business. In other words, they were just uber popular, and people copied their style, and they made money and expanded the wrestling genre. Ole Anderson had a tough-as-nails persona, and he was just a mean dude. And that's how he's remembered, as a big old heel. And they say his passing at 81 leaves a void, but it doesn't leave a void. That void was filled years ago, you know? But it is a passing of somebody who helped take wrestling to the heights it is today. My condolences go out to his friends, family, and fans. I don't know who his friends and family are anymore based off the fact that the Anderson brothers weren't really brothers. But I will never forget Ole Anderson. It's more of the Anderson brothers I won't forget. They were a true wrestling icon family. We wish you, Ole, a wonderful journey as you have begun your next adventure. To everyone else, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. It was a great show, Storming the Courts, the Sports Illustrated Dad, as well as outing Arenas and his racism and honoring Ole Anderson. I will be back next week. Once again, you can find this podcast, our political podcast, our entertainment podcast, and our interview podcast all at grumblingsmedia.com. grumblingsmedia.com. You can find us on YouTube and Rumble under the profile name Grumblings Media, and you can find us also on traditional podcast outlets Apple, Google, Spotify, y Pandora. This is William Del Pilar, your conservative Latino with points on the board. And until next time, I bid you adieu.